Greg Bell seemed like he was having such a good time. I think I half expected him to send for his children and have them join him in London, where he was just going to just live life right there on the English countryside.
Yeah, I think he got denied his visa application. That's the only reason he came back.
Yeah, pretty sure. Thought for a second he was going to become like the Manchester United insider. Manchester at 7. Man U at 7.
Yeah.
With Greg Bell. That's what I was kind of expecting.
I wouldn't allow it.
Yeah. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. I thought about it. I seriously considered it. But, yeah, the authorities kicked me out, basically, and told me I had to go home. So, it's an amazing phenomenon that you can get on a flight in London, middle of the afternoon, 2 p.m., and be on the Pacific Northwest coast at 3 p.m.
Yeah, no kidding. You know what's funny, though, about that, like maybe like staying? I flew to New Zealand one time, one-way ticket to New Zealand. And you're only supposed to stay 3 months. That's all they are supposed to technically allow you. And they were so lax in New Zealand that I landed and I showed them the passport and they're like, you don't have a return flight? And I'm like, no, not yet. And they're like, well, how long do you plan on staying? And I'm like, I don't know. 3 months? and the guy looked back at me and he was like, just don't get a job.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
All right.
You got it.
You got it, bud. I didn't come down here to work anyway.
That's right. That was it. I could have stayed, I guess, as long as I wanted, as long as I didn't get a job or get arrested. I was good.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, you are back. Good to have you back. Are you jet lagged at all?
Not too bad. Okay. Not too bad. The bye week helps in that regard.
Yeah. Well, you know what? With all the things going on, Greg, with, obviously there are bigger things at play. Paul Allen's passing is not a time to talk about necessarily how this could affect the play on the field going forward, but I will say this, I mean, you have a bye week and you were expecting it to be to recover from London, but to have a few extra days to deal with this tragedy and to deal with your return from London, pretty good time to have a bye week, I suppose.
It is, and that's what the NFL promises any team that agrees to play over there, and if they would ever put a team in London, that would be the complicating factor, is how to make it so every team that would play at a potential London franchise having a bye week right after, because then you'd have bye weeks stretching all the way into December at the end of the season. You'd have teams playing, in theory, 14, 15 weeks before a bye week, before you get the London game. Or do you have all the London games, home games in the front half of the season or the middle part? That's one of the complicating factors. And the Seahawks players I talked to about it last week while we were there, that's what they all said is, sure, we wouldn't mind an NFL team here. We love it here, but we'd have to have a bye week after we play. There's no way their bodies would be able to recover in time to play, times eight time zones and all that, 6 days later. So that was by design, and the Seahawks are fully taking it, as they always do, the entire week off. They don't have any practice from the time that the previous game ends until the Monday before the next game, which in this case is October 28th at Detroit. So this was fully by design, and yes, the passing of Paul Allen gives the franchise a chance to mourn properly and not have to worry about, talk about, somewhat less important, important thing as a football game.
Yeah, exactly. Greg Bell, our guest, brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group, a family-owned and operated dealership that places customer satisfaction as its highest priority. They feature three of America's most popular automotive brands, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Subaru, all located at the same location just off I-90 in Eastgate. That also gives you a chance to heal up as much as you possibly can in the middle of the season. Who can we expect? I mean, is KJ Wright and that group of players that should be as healthy as and ready to play whenever the Seahawks do take the field again?
Yes, and that was the target, Chuck, is especially on a wet, soft field at Wembley, don't bring a guy back off of knee surgery for his season debut for that. So the target is October 28th. Now that's 8 weeks after his surgery that was supposed to be a 3 or 4 week recovery. Pete Carroll has said a couple times that Wright's recovery from that has been, quote, slow, and that is why it's taken 2 months. Perhaps an even more impactful return, at least for the offense, is because the tight end position is so thin, is Ed Dixon. He's eligible to come off the non-football injury list for the Detroit game. You have to miss 6 games the first 6 weeks of the regular season if you go on NFI. He's been on that for quadriceps, groin injuries that had him out the entire preseason. He's a guy they gave a 3-year free agent contract to from Carolina to replace Jimmy Graham, not in production, but in as the number one tight end, known as a blocker with the Panthers behind Greg Olsen, who was their pass catcher. They don't even know what they have at tight end in Ed Dixon because they haven't seen him on the field since minicamps. So, and because Will Disley is on injured reserve, the rookie, impressive rookie tight end, they've needed Ed Dixon, and they just kind of band-aided it together with Tyrone Swoops, Darrell Daniels the last couple games. Nick Vanette's got a back injury that flared up in London and caused him not to play. So it'll be a huge return to the offense to finally have a tight end who's played a couple NFL games, and Ed Dixon to debut at Detroit next week.
Hey, Greg, I got something not necessarily about individual Seahawks stuff, but like where they're at right now in the season, I think there's some things that we might be pleasantly surprised at, also some things to worry about. As far as the standings go, way too early to talk about it, but is there anything that you see that's ultra surprising as far as teams that are where they're at in the standings, teams that are behind them, and teams that are in front of them?
Well, there's no doubt that there is just one team in the division to beat now, and that's Los Angeles because of the Jimmy Garoppolo injury. And that completely changed the NFC West. The 49ers are not nearly what they and everyone in the West thought they would be. Arizona's completely starting over with a new coaching staff and a new quarterback in Josh Rosen, and we saw how inept they are offensively and defensively a few weeks ago in the desert. So really the Seahawks have to worry about chasing the Rams. Unfortunately, they're already 3 games back with the 4th game, the tiebreaker, the Rams win here a couple weeks ago. So in terms of the season shaping, I really believe that they're going to be chasing a wild card and try to get to that 10th win and get in wild card situations. Then you're talking about road games throughout the playoffs, and their history is that's not the path to the Super Bowl. The only time, of course, they've been there is when they've had the home field advantage the 3 times they've been to the Super Bowl. But that's really where they're at because of that Rams loss. And I really think by the end of the year, they will be absolutely kicking themselves that they didn't run the ball more in weeks 1 and 2. Huh. And you think all these games don't matter. When you're a cusp of an 8, 9, 10 win team, those 0-2, those 2 losses at Denver and at Chicago, I'm convinced they wouldn't have lost at Denver had they run the ball even somewhat of the time. But passing the ball 73% of the time in the first 2 weeks of the season with an offensive line that can't pass protect may end up costing them a playoff spot.
Greg Bell is our guest talking some Seahawks football here every day, Seahawks at 7. All right, so are there going to be, are the Seahawks kicking tires on any trades before this deadline in a couple of weeks?
Oh, yeah, they always do. And it could be for a pass rusher. That comes at a high cost. Deion Jordan's hurt again. Frank Clark is playing through injuries and illnesses and excelling in NFL Defensive Player of the Week this past week, announced yesterday for his 2.5-sack, 2-forced-fumble performance in London while he was sick. But they need another pass rusher. And that, of course, is a huge premium in the NFL. It's a get-the-passer league. I'm expecting them to try. It doesn't mean they'll pull one off, but they have to get better at the pass rush. Their wide receiver situation is not how they thought it would be. Brandon Marshall has disappeared, a non-factor again in London, although he played more snaps than he did against the Rams. Jerron Brown really hasn't done a whole lot. He looked fantastic in the preseason, yet in the regular season has not done a lot. And now it's been the David Moore, Tyler Lockett, and Doug Baldwin show. Baldwin has 2 sore knees, or has had 2 sore knees. There are definite holes that they could stand to upgrade. They are well set for the cap in the salary cap situation for next year. They always want to acquire more draft picks, which is not what you're going to do if you're trying to gain players. But they are in positions to make moves. It's just that one position they need the most costs the most in the league, pass rusher.
Since you brought up Frank Clark, Joel Corey, former NFL sports agent and now basically is like a media guru for Capology.
Right.
He tweeted out yesterday, the $20 million per year highly productive pass rusher is going to become the new norm in the NFL. Get used to it. And, of course, a lot of questions then followed up, Greg, about different guys across the league, including Frank Clark. And Corey suggested, well, at minimum, you're going to have to franchise tag him at $17.5 million per year. But, yeah, he's one of these candidates, apparently, for like a $20 million per year contract. I mean, is that the road that the Seahawks are going to have to end up going down to keep Frank Clark here?
Maybe not next year, and that's why you do a multi-year deal with a guy so you don't franchise it at $17.5 million cap hit. And that's why you spread his contract over about 4 or 5 years to make it more cap-friendly. And that's the advantage the Seahawks have is retaining your own, is you can work a deal like that. But he's reached that echelon. And you talk about hitting the lottery. He's making $943,000 this year. He's at least in a tenfold, perhaps 20-fold increase on top of that. That's where he's only 25 years old. His productivity for the relative lack of playing time the last 3 years behind Averill and Bennett is among the best in the league. His sacks per snap ratio. Say that 10 times coming off a jet lag trip. That ratio was the best in the league entering the year. I don't know where it is right now, but I mean numbers that you usually associate with Khalil Mack is what Frank Clark does on a per snap basis in getting sacks and pressures. They have to retain him. And as I've been saying, each week that passes, the price goes up. And what Corey is citing is the value of the pass rusher now and the Khalil Mack record defensive player deal. And Aaron Donald before that, Aaron Donald didn't get that deal he got right before Khalil Mack because he stops the run. It's because he gets in the backfield and gets after quarterbacks. It's a passer or sack the passer league. And I totally could see that to be the next echelon and step. Not saying it's going to be for Frank Clark necessarily next year. But he's at the position, playing the position, and producing the results that get that kind of money. And that's why the Seahawks have to do it sooner than later if they don't want to pay through the nose for it.
We've talked a lot about the future being Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner.
Yes.
Bobby Wagner's not going to make $20 million a year. I mean, so is this more about Wilson, Wagner, and Clark, or is it Wilson and Clark?
Well, it's still Bobby Wagner as well. Yeah. But this is why Earl Thomas did get the money that he wanted. Is because he was 30 years old, and the Seahawks have guys in their mid-20s, and in the case of Wagner and Wilson, late 20s, they've already established that they're franchise cornerstones. But when you have a guy like Frank Clark who's going to command into the $10 to $15 million a year range, you can't go get a legacy contract to a 30-year-old all-pro at $14 million a year or whatever he wanted. And this is exactly what we have been talking about since the spring. You can't pay everybody. And what choices are you going to make? You're going to make it on a 25-year-old pass rusher who can affect the game by 2.5 sacks and 2 strip sacks and fumbles to get you 10 points in London the other day. I mean, the Seahawks could have won that game just on Frank Clark's 2 plays because the Raiders only scored 3 at the end, and Frank Clark produced 10 points for him. That's how valuable a pass rusher is, especially when you traded Michael Bennett, especially when Cliff Averill retired. You just named a triumvirate of guys they need to re-sign over the next 18 months, and that's why Earl Thomas is not part of it.
All right, well, we will see you in an hour. You can make the drive, right? Like the doctors have cleared you for driving?
Yes. If I've flown 10 hours, I can drive 30 minutes downtown. If I'm Green Lake, I can make the trip from Green Lake easily, yes.
All right.
I remember it.
We'll see you then.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Greg Bell joining us here. To talk some Seahawks football, and of course it's Thursday, so we'll do our 12th man roundtable with Greg Curtis and Hugh Millen. That trading deadline coming up in a couple of weeks, and I have some big names being floated around right now, by the way, including Derek Carr's name popping up as somebody the Giants should be interested in to replace Eli Manning going forward. Wow. So there's a lot of heat in that area, and hopefully we'll have some chance to talk about it a little bit later on in the show. Coming up next, though, Bucky and I agree. There should not be an orange base in baseball, but there's something we disagree upon, and we're going to dive back into that conversation next.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL, Seattle's original diehard sports station, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Congratulations to your fighting Seattle Jackson Phelpses, making their 10th straight appearance in the playoffs, by the way. Sounders winning last night. Yeah, I'll let you know that in a matter of 13 minutes, we will have Fact or Fiction. We'll have another game for you to respond fact or fiction to, maybe win $1,000 by doing it. Who knows? Maybe fortune will smile upon you.
You've given away, how many weeks has it been? We've given away a ton of money.
We have given away $3.6 billion.
Well, it's official.
By my calculation.
We're awesome.
I'm not great at math, though.
Well, you don't have to be for this job.
I don't think you have to really be anything. Yeah, just willing to be loud and obnoxious. Welcome in. It's Chuck and Buck in the morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. All right, so I didn't know which way you were coming at this when the show began, but we ended up kind of having different opinions. Well, not kind of. We had different opinions on this. This play last night in the Red Sox-Astros game where Joe West called fan interference.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if you wanted to give the argument that Joe West made the call, and the only way that you can overrule a call by an umpire is that if there is indisputed evidence, then that's your trump card, where you can say there, because there's no way to determine, in my opinion, whether or not those fans truly were out over the wall. So it's hard to say, yeah, you're wrong. Where I'm stunned and where I think it was wrong is that it was called interference to begin with. The rule states that if a player reaches into the... Okay, so the rule states that no interference shall be allowed when a fielder reaches over a fence, railing, rope, or into a stand to catch a ball.
Mm-hmm.
He does so at his own risk. Now, here's the other part of it, though. However, should a spectator reach out on the playing field side of such fence, railing, or rope and plainly prevent the fielder from catching the ball, then the batsman should be called out for the spectator's interference. Now, see, in my opinion, he did plainly prevent the fielder from catching the ball. I think Mookie Betts would have caught that ball. But I think, from my angle, and maybe other people have some optics that they can show me here, Bucky, but I have not seen any evidence that suggests that the fans were over the fence. And by my naked eye, and I would think by an umpire's naked eye, that Mookie Betts clearly looked like he was reaching over the wall. I think it looked far more like the player is reaching into the stands, which means martial law, fan can do anything. Fan can wipe a booger on his hat if he wants to.
That should be illegal.
Well, yeah, that should be illegal. And the opposite side of it is, should a spectator reach out onto the field like Jeffrey Mayer did? But I don't see a reaching out onto the field. I see guys standing up and reacting to a ball about ready to hit them in the face. You know, to me, they reacted as a fan should. Ball's coming at me. I got my eye on the prize. I'm going to try to catch it. And Mookie Betts went in to try to make a spectacular play, and that's what I mean. He went in. And once you go in, you don't have the right to the ball anymore. The fan has as much right to it as you do. So to make that call by Joe West, for him to make that call, stuns me. And I can't believe that Jose Altuve, and I'm not rooting for the Astros, by the way.
Right.
I don't want the Astros to win.
Right.
I am surprised still right now that Jose Altuve isn't a... I'm expecting at any moment Rob Manfred to announce, that's a home run by Jose Altuve. It's 8-8. We will renew the game today. Because Rob Manfred hates baseball.
Yes, he does. I could see him trying to screw it up. but that the reason I would think he would screw it up was because I think that they did get it right. Now, I have to agree. I think that... Based on the all the footage they showed in the game last night, it would be hard to overturn whatever call Joe West made. His initial call was fan interference, and so I don't know for sure that they could have overturned it had he called it a home run. I don't know if they would have then overturned it. But when I start kind of deducing it down to what I'm seeing, when I look at it, I have one view here that's not the same view that I saw yesterday. It was more right down the fence line. This one's kind of coming from center field.
right? And he's over on the right field line. But he, when he jumps up, now mind you, this was a crazy athletic play. To be going full speed,
sure.
And this dude
and it's
gets
a really
crazy.
Low wall, by the way.
Yep.
This, make your walls higher, baseball. I would like to see that.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, if you want to take this out of it, this is going to be a play that if Houston ends up losing the series, that people are going to debate about. And I think if we open this debate up to everyone, I think you're going to have a 45% say it should have been a home run. 45% are going to say it should have been an out. And there's going to be 10% they're going to go, I don't know, it's too tough to call. It's because that's really where it is it's a 50-50. When I look at it from the
sounds
angle.
Sounds like
that
it's a 45-45-10.
45-45-10.
Based on your analysis.
Yeah, yeah. That's what, well, to me, that's what I would think if you pulled the masses,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
where it would
I
be.
Know,
I'm
yeah.
in the I'm in the side of I think that they made the correct call because when he's jumping, right, when this still shot that's taken of Mookie Betts, it's kind of from his back side, right, going down looking towards the right field line. He is, his body, like his torso, his armpit is a foot, at least a foot away from the wall. And it's actually at perfect height out of the yellow line. His armpit is about a foot from the wall. Now, he's reaching out. Now, he's taking up some of that foot reaching towards the wall. So his glove looks like it's right about at the fence line. Now, it could be an inch, you know, the back webbing of his glove could be an inch into the foul territory. The front fingers of his glove, his thumb and pinky, could be on the infield side of the ball.
If there's then, no way that Joe West can see an invisible line going up from right field.
No.
I mean, the rule is, I think the fan who interfered said it best. The ball was coming hard. We wanted to catch it. We didn't cross over the wall. We weren't hanging over the wall, and they weren't. They stood up in their seats, and they reached out for a ball that was about to hit them.
If they are reaching into field.
If you're a base umpire, no, they weren't.
They are.
Not like over the wall. They're not hanging over the wall.
Well, they're not hanging, but they're in the field of play.
My point is, he's standing down the right field line. He's not there. He's not at the wall, like, looking. And he's watching three fans stand straight up and reach out their hands. Now, to me, there's no way I'm making that call unless they're hanging over like Jeffrey Mayer did in the famous Yankees game. It's just the reason for the rule to begin with that took the ball away from Tony Tarasco years ago.
I don't like the fact that there is gray area to be debated both ways. I think that they should have something like the Cubs have, where it's you lean as far as you want. You cannot lean into the field of play there with the way that their fence is set up. Or make the walls so high.
Well, that's a home run at Wrigley.
Yes. Well, it's because the outfielder has no chance of jumping up over the fence that juts out towards the playing field at Wrigley. If you make the fences, you could take this whole entire debate off the table if you just make the fences higher to where a guy literally can't rob a homer.
But there's nothing you can do about that.
No.
Right now.
Or just move the seats back to where the front row is 4 feet behind the fence. There's a lot of fields that have that.
I just don't. You go to a game and you pay a lot of money to see your team play in a playoff game. And because you stood up and tried to catch a ball that's coming right to you, you may have cost your team the World Series? I mean, I'm all about intent, and you know this. I mean, we talked about it yesterday with the targeting call. The intent to, I'm going to get that ball, and it's more important to me. I know it's not over the fence, and I'm going to reach over and grab it and pull it in.
Mm-hmm.
Call that every time. But you're a fan, and all you did was stand up and try to catch a ball that was clearly a home run? I mean, that was a home run.
Well, it would have been an out, too. It clearly would have been an out as well. So it's both ways there, right? He would have caught the ball.
I think he would have.
If the guy basically closed his glove for him and then it hit on the outside
right.
of his glove.
But again, this isn't about, I agree with you that he probably would have caught the ball.
I don't think they had bad intent. I agree with you there.
But if you reach in over, and I don't see any visual proof because optics can be strange. If you reach over, you forfeit your right to it as a player.
Yeah, I wish that I was as smart as my wife is, because I guarantee my wife could break this thing down with her mechanical engineering, literally to tell you the distance between this and the angle of this. If you just look at
this. There are scientists that can tell you, Bucky, that the world's flat. I mean, you can make that say anything you want. That's why I think you have to, as an umpire. Not us now debating it, but as an umpire, You got to make that fan's got to be obviously over the fence and interfering. Not there's an invisible line that goes from the fence to the roof that he kind of went over as he reached out to catch a ball.
If you as an umpire think it's a judgment call at that point, he has to go one way or the other, and then you can either challenge it and overturn it, or you've got to challenge it and it can't be overturned, or you can challenge it and it's actually confirmed. I don't think they do that like the NFL, but if I'm looking at it, I would have thought right off the bat that it was interference. And then the more that I looked at it, I continued to think it's interference. And I agree, optics can be deceiving, but if there's the guy in the orange shirt, and then there's a dude to his right that's in the blue shirt.
He definitely reached over.
Well, they're both of their hands are in the exact same spot when they make contact with his glove. Both their hands are the exact same distance. The guy to his left, the one in the gray shirt, he's got his hand on the wall, then he's leaning over the wall and reach out. Now, he made no contact with it, but his hand is the exact same distance over the wall as well.
I'll float you another theory. It wasn't even the strangest ruling of the day in Major League Baseball. The strangest ruling of the day was that the Astros got caught red-handed stealing signs with some suited douchebag at the Red Sox games, and they played it off earlier in the day as if, oh, no, he was taking video to prevent them from stealing their signs.
Oh.
That was their excuse yesterday. In other words, we're going to blow this out of the water because we're going to have an irate fan base in Cleveland, an irate fan base in Boston, and an irate fan base in Los Angeles if we acknowledge that we allowed this guy for series at a time to stand on the lip of their dugout and steal calls. But in the meantime, conspiracy theorist Chuck Powell, Joe West is getting a call from Rob Manfred, hater of baseball. Boy, if there's anything you can do to keep the Astros from winning this game, there's some money in it for you.
Well, I can see where your mind would go there.
We can't have Dodger fans, Indian fans, and Red Sox fans thinking that we allowed a spy to stand on their dugout in full view of everyone with advanced technological equipment and steal signs from them. But we also can't, in good conscience, allow this team to win the World Series again.
Well, I can see how, for multiple reasons, why they wouldn't want them to win it again. One, their ratings would ended up being Milwaukee and Houston, the ratings would suck. But I don't think that there's any chance that there's a conspiracy going on behind it.
Don't say no chance. Don't speak in absolutes.
I would say literally 99.9%.
I would say that they were like, okay, we can't let all the umpires know, but Joe West, that's our guy. Play, Joe. Boy, I'd sure like you to call it the other way.
Yeah, well, I suppose that
I'm
there's
cackling
a,
like yes, the Joker
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know. I suppose there is a chance, because I agree that there would be better.
I mean, you can sit here and you can do all the scientific studying you want, and you can show me. You can make an absolute 1,000% determination that, yes, that fan was over the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no way on earth an umpire standing 200 feet away is making that call.
It's not happening.
When a fan is standing erect.
He's not straight up, though. That's the thing. They are leaning over.
One guy was leaning over, the guy furthest from the ball that never came in contact with him. The other two stood straight up in their seats and tried to catch a baseball.
They're both bent at the hips. I mean, we could argue it forever, but I mean, I think
they're not hanging
call.
Over the wall.
Yeah, it's not egregious. I agree. It's not crazy, but they're in the field of play, and they stopped him from catching the ball. So I think it was the right call.
Oh. All right, time for fact or fiction.
It's time for fact.
Just a fact, Jack. Just a fact, Jack.
Or fiction, powered by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest.
It is a fact.
Fact or Fiction brought to you by the Emerald Queen Casino. Every show, every day is making a football pick against the spread or the total. Listeners have 12 minutes to text fact if they agree with the pick made at that given moment, or fiction if they disagree with that pick. If you're right, and you only have to be right once per week, you can be eligible for a $1,000 cash prize. Or you will be. Not can be. You will be eligible. You can win that $1,000 cash prize provided by the Emerald Queen Casino, the entertainment capital of the Northwest. And if you get enough of these answered correctly, well, and you are champion, you'll win $10,000 at the end of the year. All right, so, oh, man, there are some games that I'm kicking around. I was split way back on Monday when I had to make my last pick. I kind of want to go college football here, but I have been atrocious with college football so far in this little fact or fiction thing, so I'm not going to mess with a streak.
All right.
As minimal of a streak as it is. I don't want to wear that damn shirt of shame, and there is no way I'm going to just jump outside my comfort zone and pick a college game when my numbers suggest I should never, ever, ever do that again.
Right.
So I was torn between a couple of games. On Monday, I went with the Patriots over the Bears, right? At that time, I haven't seen anything else that stands out to me as much as the other one that I was torn on. So I think the Minnesota Vikings have righted the ship. I think Sam Darnold is still a rookie. I don't care if it's being played at New York. I don't care if the Minnesota Vikings are giving 3 points to the New York Jets. Again, I just, in my heart, as deep as it can go, I think that the Minnesota Vikings are much better, I don't care if they play on Mars, than 3 points over the New York Jets. So I'm going Vikings on the road, giving 3 to the New York Jets. Okay, that's my pick. Text fact or fiction now at 49451. Fact if you agree, fiction if you disagree, and hopefully I can avoid that gaudy purple hooded nightmare that you and Slick Hawk have had to don here in the last week.
Now you don't want it.
I don't want it. I don't want to be associated with it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. All right, coming up next here on our show, it is game day in Pullman. And I'm not sure I've ever seen a reaction like this. How big of a game is this for the Pac-12? Who's going to win it? We're going to break it down next.
Ladies and gentlemen,
coming to you live on Seattle's original diehard sports station, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR. Now back to Chuck and Buck in the morning.
At the top of the hour, it's our Thursday 12th Man Roundtable, which will include the Ocho. What are you smiling about back there? Did I say something wrong? Was there a... Oh!
Crabtree's in there.
Oh, Crabtree's in there, Bob. He's responding to Crabtree. He's smiling over Crabtree's.
I'm always smiling when I'm working with you guys.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Nate.
Thanks a lot for putting the fixing the doomsday clock, by the way. Now we have to be on time again.
I didn't fix it.
It's actually not fixed, because right now the doomsday clock says it's 12 till 11 a.m.
Oh. See, I don't read the one with the hands. I read the digital one.
The digital one says it is 7:47. That's right. But the other one? Yeah.
It says it's 10:47.
It's 10:47.
We're close, so we're working overtime right now. What do we get paid time and a half?
That's right. Boy, if anything, the doomsday clock at least needs to be in sync, don't you think?
Well,
if you're going to say that that's the end of the world, it shouldn't be two different times.
Yeah, because you're going to have a bunch of people freaking out 10 hours ahead of time.
Isn't
or 3 hours.
The idea of the doomsday clock
is
that it's predicting our doom.
Uh-huh.
There shouldn't be various. We shouldn't get all fired up about dying en masse and then clock expires and there's
you got 3 more hours. Well crap. I don't know what I'm gonna do now with my extra 3 hours.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Start over, redo the last 3 hours.
All right, well I don't know, maybe that's a sign of doom that's taking place right now, Bucky, because apparently every human being in the world is gathering in Pullman, Washington as we speak.
Yep.
So if that's not a sign of the end of days, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, it could be.
Because what I am seeing, the photographic evidence that I am witnessing.
Crazy.
Is remarkable. It's like everyone ever associated with that school is going to Pullman, not this weekend, like now. They dropped everything they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even kiss their kids goodbye. I don't know how this is going to end up, but daddy's going to drink a lot of beer. Hopefully he'll see you again.
Hopefully I'll make it back.
But the photos of their partying that's already taking place, and it's only Thursday now, and I was seeing this yesterday, and I think it was going on the day before. And I would imagine since the announcement was made by yes. Kirk Herbstreit that game day is finally going to Pullman, I mean, mind-boggling. That is incredible what is happening, how fired up they are. And yes, there's a big game this week, but pretty much for a bus coming to town. That's incredible.
It is incredible. I mean, I suppose it's one of those long time. It's a things are more appreciated or more, I don't want to say blown out of proportion when you've been waiting for it for so long. It is surprising to me that it's been 15 years, right? Or is that how long they've been waving that flag and it hadn't happened? But then, I mean, I just know I have a ton of friends that are Cougs, and that just that kind of area in general, a lot of folks over on the east side, they are diehard Coug fans. I mean, they're just diehard for their Cougar nation, and boy, they're going to come out and fully support it when all of a sudden they get some national attention. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be a big game, but boy, the festivities leading up to the game, there's going to be a lot of drunken publics.
Yeah, I've not been there before to experience this, but it's like another world, huh?
Yeah, it is unusual. So the Coug, there's this little bar. It's a little hole-in-the-wall bar that everybody knows. It's the Coug. And I've been to the Coug a couple times and left the Coug not in nearly as good a shape as I walked in.
There's not going to be a roll of Cougar gold cheese left in the world after this week.
No, it's amazing. The amount of partying that goes on there is amazing. And I can only imagine how nuts it is right now and Saturday morning. Friday night, stupid. Saturday morning, I would love to be there. I mean, I really would. But
you want to see the spectacle?
I want to be a part of the spectacle.
Well, remember when we had the eclipse down in Oregon?
Uh-huh. I didn't go to that.
But people from all over the world were like going there, and Oregon was worried, oh my gosh, they're going to poop everywhere and ruin the economy or ruin the ecology of our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful state, which we're so proud of.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't handle this. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like all of these Cougs are coming from everywhere. And even people like you, it's not a Coug. There's I got to go see this thing.
Right.
I mean, an eclipse happens only once every blah, blah, blah. This might never happen again, game day.
It might not.
I gotta. Do you have to wear a different kind of glasses to stare straight into the Washington State celebration this week?
Yeah, they're called beer goggles. You literally walk around town. Everyone there, at the outskirts of town, you get stopped and they give you a pair of beer goggles. Uh-huh. And then you can't leave until you're totally, well, you have to prove that you've been drunk for more than 48 hours. And then you can. They'll let you leave. So
and look, I mean, I know that there are a lot of people around here that don't want to give, like, Coug Nation any credit. But I'm going to tell you something. Mike Leach is one hell of a coach. And for that program to have lost what they lost, this shows you the health of that program under his direction.
Mm-hmm.
That they lost as much talent as they lost this past offseason. All-American offensive linemen. All-American defensive lineman, a four-year starting quarterback who got drafted in the National Football League, and for you, and your defensive coordinator, who everybody thought had solved the defensive woes in Pullman, and Alex Grinch, to lose that much in one offseason, and then, you know, not really, and be better the following year. They look better. Gardner Minshew is better than Luke Falk. Dirty secret there. He looks better than what Luke Falk does. The defense is still playing well.
Mm-hmm.
It's a credit to Mike Leach. As weird as he is, and as much as we want to crack on him, and how, you know, I know that in Seattle you don't want to give any credit to the little estranged brother in the state. But man, that guy deserves a lot because that program. Is healthy and strong.
It's healthy and it's strong, and I think a huge part of that credit, but the fact that he gets people to go to Pullman. Now, mind you, like, I mean, you're not getting any studs from
Florida.
Well, I don't think he's still, I still don't think he's getting studs.
No.
I think he just knows the kind of guys that he needs to bring in to run his system and what have you. Now, look, they got a lot yet to prove this year. I mean, 5-1 does not a season make. But they're favorites this weekend against Oregon, who is ranked top 12 in the country and just beat Washington last week.
Yeah. Well, I think a huge part of that, Oregon, yeah, they won. They're not the greatest team on the planet, obviously. They've played at home. They even lost one at home. They haven't been away from home. This is definitely going to be their biggest test on the road so far. And then you start adding in the hype, the atmosphere that game days bring into that place. That place is already not an easy place to play. But now you add this extra hype, the energy that's going to be around there. It's going to be a tough game. They're going to have to. It's going to be a fun game to watch. I mean, I'm excited about it.
Describe it. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. Going to be entertaining. I don't know if it'll be as. I mean, last week's game was great. I mean, the outcome sucked, but that was a great football game down in Eugene last week. So it's a lot to measure up to. But, man, Pac-12's having a fun year to this point, if you just look at it from bird's eye view.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up next, we've got our round table. Greg Bell's back in town. Curtis Crabtree will be here. Hugh Millen, Sports Radio 950 KJR.